WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
A lot of women identify with the character Melanie Mayron plays in the TV series 30-something. She plays Melissa, a struggling freelance photographer who is single, wants to start a family, but can't find the man to start it with. In a way, this role is a continuation of Mayron's character in the 1978 film Girlfriends. She starred as a freelance photographer in her 20s, having a hard time establishing her financial and emotional independence. You may also remember Melanie Mayron from her roles in Harry and Tonto, Missing, and Playing for Time. Her new movie is in many ways her own movie. She co-produced, co-wrote, and co-stars in the comedy Sticky Fingers. She and Helen Slater play two broke musicians sharing an apartment. A friend who deals marijuana asks to leave a suitcase at their place. After the friend leaves, the roommates open the suitcase and discover it contains close to $1 million. The temptation is too great. They dig into the money, pay off the rent, then go on a compulsive shopping spree, swearing they'll pay back the money. Denitra Vance plays a friend who warns them they are out of control and in big trouble.
$194,000. You could be killed. This could be mafia money. Big men in big suits with big guns could come here and drag you off by the hair. You should be scared. They could put a bomb in your car.
We don't have a car.
We could get one for the new equipment.
Maybe a van.
That's stealing. You're stealing. That's what it's called.
Stealing.
You're right. I've tried to stop. I really have. Every day I try not to do it. Every day I tell myself today I am not going to go shopping. But then I'm out there and I'm surrounded by things and I can't help myself.
I had to buy a dress, but a dress, one dress with a nice cut, good fabric, flattering line costs $3,000, and with accessories, that's another $4,500 right there.
Can I have some more champagne?
We need help, Evan.
We don't know what else to do.
Melanie Mayron, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
That's a very funny premise for this new movie. What gave you the idea of these, you know, two women who come into this money and become compulsive shoppers?
Well, Catlin Adams, who co-wrote and co-produced the film with me, we had been writing some other scripts that never were made. We wrote a few TV films for CBS, and they weren't made. We wrote a film for Canon. It wasn't made. You know, out in L.A., the studios develop tons and tons of projects, and they pay writers, and they only make X amount of them. And we were just tired of everything we've written not ever getting to the screen. So we decided to come up with a story that we could produce ourselves. We had these two characters, Lolly and Hattie, that were sort of like patterned after a female Laurel and Hardy. You know, one who's quieter and less confrontational, and one who will blurt out anything and, you know, not be afraid of confrontation. And one of Catlin's favorite films was always Some Like It Hot, which had Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis as two musicians on the run. And we'd also been going to the movies and, you know, never seeing enough women up there on the screen. You know, so many of the stories were great stories and terrific, but it was rare that, you know, I wanted to, like, you know, see role models up there too and identify and, you know, just see more actresses. Being an actress, I wanted to be able to work more too. So Callan came up with the idea of a bag of money, and, you know, you pick up these two people struggling. You know, we were like actresses, writers that were struggling with our careers, so we just made them musicians, and they were behind on their rent, and, you know, things weren't going as well as they should. And suddenly this bag of money comes into their apartment, literally, and, you know, what would happen to really honest, good people when temptation is literally under their nose and events happen in their lives that push them over the edge, and how really, you know, money can destroy friendship, but also it be about how it destroys their other relationships. And we took the approach of a fable.
You know, I think in a lot of male versions of this movie, the two characters would have gambled away the money or something like that. Now, you have your gambling scene in it, but in this version, the two women shop it all away. They become compulsive shoppers. Did you feel like you knew, or that you are yourself an addicted shopper?
I don't spend money when I don't have it. You know, I mean, you hear stories about some people that'll take a credit card, use it up, right, to the limit, pay the monthly payments, and then get out another credit card with another $2,000 limit. That I've never, you know, been like that. I if I didn't have money, I would just window shop. You know, I mean, I just enjoyed looking at things.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. You went to the, like, role models and things. So what you've done is a comedy. It's not, you know, the two women in it aren't like, when I grow up, I like to be like Lolly in the movie Sticky Fingers. I mean, they're not role models in that respect.
No, but it's where women can go to the movies and relate and have fun. You know, we both wanted to have a movie that we wanted to see, you know, and that's what we wanted to make.
Well, this is the first time you've actually gotten to act in a movie that you've written, a part that you've written for yourself. Were there little personal touches that you put in because you knew you'd like to do that as an actress?
The overall concept, I mean, I haven't been in a comedy in a long time, and I very much wanted to do a role where I could do both, where the emotional work would be there and the comedic work would be substantiated by the emotional work, but, you know, it would also be funny. I think when an actor is really emotionally into a scene, I mean, when you're really hysterical, but you say something because you know you're going to say it in a funny way, it's like the best that comedy can be.
I think it's the ambition of many actors and actresses to make their own movies, but few actually succeed in doing it. Now, you co-produced this film. Did you have to shop it around to a lot of investors before making it?
Yeah, we sure did. We started this project 5 years ago. It took 3 years to write it and package it with a group of actors that we could say, these actors will do it when we get the money, and hear yes from a studio or from a company. We took it to all the Hollywood studios, and none of them wanted to make a film that starred two women, because at the time there weren't any films out there that were starring two women, and it, after all, it is a business. You know, then Outrageous Fortune came out, and, you know, $90 million later, thank you, they went, oh, well, gee, you know, I guess people will go see a film with two women. When Desperately Seeking Susan came out, they considered that a fluke.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know what I think might have been awkward when you were, as a producer, taking the script around trying to get backing for it? The backers always want to know who are the stars going to be, and of course one of them was going to be you. And I can imagine how you must have felt with potential backers saying to you, well, I don't think Melanie Mayron is a big enough star for us to invest our money in. Did that happen?
Well, yeah. I mean, I knew that the secret of this film would be the ensemble, you know, the level of actors that we got. I knew that, you know, I mean, I wasn't like, you know, Bette Midler or Goldie Hawn or somebody. I was just me, you know. And it would be whoever I was with as Hattie and the rest of the group. And that in tandem with the script, which I thought was good and funny and that people would identify with, and also the budget. The budget was $3.25 million. It's a low budget for Hollywood. Hollywood film is, I'd say $8 million is pretty much considered low budget for Hollywood, and about 12 to 15 is average.
If you're just joining us, my guest is actress Melanie Mayron, who also co-produced and co-wrote the movie that she's now starring in, which is called Sticky Fingers. It's a comedy. Did you have to develop a whole new persona as a producer?
No, I think I always had a gift of being a producer. I've always gotten along with people really well, and had a great interest in all aspects of filmmaking and loved to, you know, recognize different people's talents in different areas. And I just had a blast. It seemed like a real natural, you know, segue from acting and from writing.
You know, you mentioned how cheap the movie was to do. One of the ways of keeping a movie cheap is to have the actors and actresses work cheap. Now, I think you got a lot of your friends to work on the movie. I could see that being kind of awkward, too, deciding whether you were going to ask them to, you know, to work at the lowest wage that you could get away with or not, you know. It's, on the one hand, you want your friends to be in the movie and everything. On the other hand, you'd like to offer them as much money as possible, I'm sure. So what was that like for you?
It was tricky. I mean, that's why the movie took so long, I think, to write, to get it to a place where we felt comfortable, because we would write we would write the script and we'd say, Eileen, what do you think of the role of Stella, the landlady, to Eileen Brennan, and she'd give her comments, and if she wasn't, you know, she knew that once she said yes, based on her availability, whenever we got the money, she would do it and she would work for scale. Same thing with Carol Kane and Peter Riegert, we had developed the role of Sam for, but at the end, last year when we were finally ready to go, Peter was doing The Nerd on Broadway and couldn't do the film. So we got it to Chris Guest, who I had also done Girlfriends with. He'd played my boyfriend in that, and this little film that kind of came and went several years back called Heartbeeps with Andy Kaufman and Bernadette Peters. And Chris and I were, like, together in that. So he got the script, and he said, well, I think that Sam is a little bit of a heel, and I don't really want to play somebody, and I don't think he's sympathetic enough. So we looked at the role of Sam again and made some changes and just made him very confused, and I think it helped. And Chris said, okay, I'll do it for scale.
Mm-hmm. Melanie Mayron is my guest, and she co-wrote, co-produced, and stars in the new comedy Sticky Fingers. Now, our listeners will also know you from your role in 30-something as Melissa, the photographer and single woman. how did you get the part in that?
Well, last February, a year ago February, we were trying to make the deal with Sticky Fingers with Spectrafilm. And our lawyer, we had completely become Lolly and Hattie by the end of 4 years. We were completely broke. It's like change your career, become an independent producer, and go broke. And that's exactly what had happened. And I didn't have the money for the rent. And my agent sent me a script of a pilot, and I've never been open to pilots and always kind of steered clear of the series commitment because I love doing movies and theater and good TV movies, and I liked having the freedom to bounce around, although in the last 4 years it's not like I was getting hired for much. But I got this script called 30-something, and there were two women's roles in it. One was this character Hope, and the other was her friend Ellen. Hope was married, and Ellen is this woman in business, sort of like Diane Keaton in Baby Boom. I thought, what a great role. I'd love to play this character. So I went up, auditioned for the role, did my best. I thought I gave a really good audition. And they said, well, that was really good, Melanie. Thank you. Could you read for the role of Melissa? And I said, Melissa who? I mean, I, like, didn't remember her in the script. There were apparently two other women in the script, Melissa and Nancy, who kind of came in and came out, and that was it, but at least in the pilot. But they said, no, 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 if this series sells, these are seven equal characters, it's an ensemble story, and each week we'll get and see somebody else's life. So it turned out I got the part. And I said, well, okay, I'll do it because, you know, most pilots never sell, and all my friends do pilots every year, and they never sell. And I didn't know really who this Melissa character was, and I was a little panicky that if you sign for 5 years, I went, you know, boy, I really don't know who Melissa is. But I also didn't think it would sell, and I really wanted to make my movie, and I really wanted to be able to pay my lawyer so he could close the deal with Spectrafilm so we could go make Sticky Fingers. So that's what I did.
And now you're actually in the series, and I guess you're signed to a 5-year contract?
Yeah.
So are you pleased?
Well, when I first heard, I was up in Toronto. We shot Sticky Fingers 2 weeks in New York and 5 weeks in Toronto. And I was night shooting, and I got home at like 8 a.m, crawled into bed. I was like asleep for 2.5 hours, and at 10:30, my agent called me from New York and said, Melanie, I've got great news. And I said, yeah, what, Tim, huh? I was like sound asleep. And he goes, the pilot sold, and not only did it sell, but ABC is so excited. They're giving it the best time slot they got of the new season, Tuesday night, 10 o'clock, following Moonlight. Isn't that fantastic? I was like, fantastic. That's fantastic. I was like, I couldn't believe it. It wasn't that I was like, it wasn't that I was not thrilled. I mean, my God, I have been scarfing and scraping money-wise for so many years, borrowing money from my parents and friends and, you know, getting up with money and then, like, you know, spending money on Sticky Fingers and, you know, being broke again. What scared me was that I didn't know what part I had signed for. You know, I mean, I know the power of TV. I've had friends over the years, one by one, they've become rich and famous. And like Carol Kane, she's done series and she's still doing movies. Danny DeVito, he's still doing, you know what I mean? If anything else, the TV helped their film career. So I knew that it could only help me and the exposure would help me, but I just didn't know who in the world Melissa was.
Well, in a way, I think viewers didn't really know who she was until several months, actually, because for a while, your character was just like the friend or the cousin in a very peripheral role, and then more recently, you started getting like episodes that you'd star in, stories about your life.
Right. I think,
did you push for that?
When we started it, in the pilot, she was a friend, and she had had a past relationship with Gary, Michael's best friend, and that was it, and they were now all friends. And when we got back, I mean, when we started for real last August, they said, well, we're going to make Melissa Michael's cousin. I said, oh, okay. And I said, well, what does she do? It's like, we don't know. Nobody knew. And I said, well, look, you've already got one single woman. You know, now you've got two. And it's like, how are you going to make the definition between us? So I suggested she be a photographer because I thought that way she's in a freelance career, kind of like me and all my friends that I know, right? Since they already had a single character in a regular corporate, you know, 9-to-5 situation. Because otherwise I didn't know what would really define us or differentiate between us. And then I thought, if she's in a freelance career, at least I can relate to somebody on the show, you know. I could watch 30-something and see what Melissa's doing with her life and kind of know what to do with mine, or at least commiserate.
Go ahead.
No, and you know, a photographer was at least something visual. You know, if I was a writer or a painter, you know, it wouldn't really be, you know, you couldn't really look at it or use it. It's just somebody sitting, you know. So photographer is kind of like visual, and you could see me working on things. And I also thought it could tie in with Cousin Michael and Elliot's advertising company, you know, which in fact they wound up doing.
Just a quick question about 30-something. I think when the series started, a lot of people thought it would be the TV version of the movie The Big Chill. And a lot of people feared, too, that it was just going to be a series designed to attract yuppies because they had a lot of money to spend and it would be good for demographics for the advertisers.
Right.
Do you feel that people were working hard to make it be something bigger than that?
Well, the creators and the producers and the writers sure were. I don't think they ever thought about demographics. I think they thought the same way that Catelyn and I thought about Sticky Fingers. We made that movie because it was a movie we wanted to see. They developed the show because they wanted to get into the daily exploration of daily problems and things that were concerning them. The two creators are married. One's had a marriage that's been rocky, but they've survived, and they have two kids, and the other creator has a happy marriage, and they, I think, wanted to get into the lives of themselves and all their friends.
My guest is Melanie Mayron, and she co-stars in the TV series 30-something. She plays the role of Melissa, the freelance photographer. She also stars, co-wrote, and co-produced the new comedy Sticky Fingers. We're going to talk more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Melanie Mayron is my guest. Let me ask you, when you're doing a weekly series like 30-something, when do you find out how big your part is that week? Do you know before you get the script, or do you just find out when the scripts are handed out?
Well, the show takes 8 days to shoot, and the last day of one show, you have a read-through at lunch break of the next show that's going to start the next day or the next, you know, after the weekend. And you usually get it just a couple days before. Mm-hmm. There's no rehearsal.
Really?
None.
Yeah. You know, I was just watching again the first movie that you starred in, and that was Girlfriends, an independent movie that was made back in, was it 1978?
Yeah.
In Girlfriends, you played someone who was still kind of insecure, coming into her own, single. And in a lot of ways, it's very similar to the character you play on 30-something. Do you see a connection between the two?
Yes, it's just that in 30-something, Melissa is 30-something and not 20-something.
Right.
I think that the difference between Melissa and Susan in Girlfriends is that Melissa, I don't know where Susan would be in 10 years. You know, Claudia Weill directed two of the episodes this year and said to me, we should think about doing a sequel to Girlfriends. And I said, what a great idea, because it'd be fascinating to, you know, see what would have happened to her. But Melissa, and the way I've approached Melissa and tried to maintain it with each script, is just someone who's not willing to compromise. She is in her 30s. She's had a dream to be this photographer. She doesn't have as much money as her cousin Michael or anyone else, any of his friends. She's still, you know, scarfing. She's making do. And she doesn't want to just be with someone just to be with them. She'd rather be alone if she's not going to be in love.
You know, one of the things I noticed watching Girlfriends the other night was how you've really changed physically. You really look just about completely different. You're much thinner now. The shape of your face seems to have changed. What's behind the metamorphosis?
I had some braces on my teeth for 5 years that were on and off. And I lost some weight, and I had my nose shortened to hair.
Oh.
Still the same shape, it was just shortened to hair.
Mm-hmm. Is it necessary to do that kind of thing to get the kind of parts you want?
I just, no, well, with me, I just always thought I had my mother's and my sister's nose. And then I, like, saw myself in film a few times, and I saw myself from the side, and I went, oh, it's just like their nose, but just a hair longer. And I just, it was really funny, because it's like, how did I get to be, like, you know, 20-something and, like, not know what my face looked like? But I think whenever you look at yourself in the mirror, you know, I mean, you always see yourself straight on, right? And when I'd look at myself straight on, I looked fine. But from the side, or when I smiled, I saw that, you know, it went down just a touch. You know, I think if I'd had a nose like Meryl Streep's or Barbara Streisand's, you know, where it was a real specific size and shape, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have done anything to it, but it really wasn't. It was just kind of like a nice nose, just a little too long, you know, so it was a real easy thing.
You know, although you are really striking now and you're very, very attractive, you carry yourself on 30-something as if you know what it's like to be very self-conscious and to feel very awkward and to feel very kind of uncomfortable with yourself,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a kind of interesting contrast in a way, because, you know, you're very, very good looking, yet you have the kind of, in this role, in 30-something, you communicate this discomfort, this physical discomfort.
Well, maybe it is my physical discomfort with myself. Maybe I'm not used to, I don't know, I haven't worked a lot prior to this last year,
mm-hmm.
and I'm also thinner. I'd lost weight about 5-8 years ago, and it's like I've kept it off, and I think I just haven't worked, and I haven't been working out, and, you know, I think I have a posture problem. I think, Terry, you know, you're telling me some interesting
You know, in your two biggest roles in Girlfriends and in 30-something, you've played a single woman who would like to not be single. So can I ask you, are you single yourself? Do you identify with those roles?
Yeah, but I don't think I play someone who would like to not be single. That's what I've been trying to, like, make sure doesn't happen on the show. I think that what I've been trying to do is play someone who doesn't mind being single. She'd rather be single than be with someone. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's like I think that if a woman gets to her 30s, you know, she's not every day waking up and going, oh, gosh, you know, I've got to have a man in my life. I think she's more, you know, she's caught up in her life and what's happening in her work and all of that and where she is and how she's feeling that day. I think that she's not desperate, you know, for love. I think she's a little relaxed about it. I think that's the difference with when you're in your 30s. I think in your 20s, you know, you are desperate. You're kind of like, you know, looking around. Who is there? Who's cute? Who can I go out with? You know, so-and-so's going out with somebody. Who can, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And in that 10-year difference, you just settle into yourself more.
You grew up in suburban Philadelphia.
Right.
When you were coming of age and deciding that you really would love to act, did you feel that you'd never be able to figure out how to get there from here? Living, you know, just living in a kind of ordinary, comfortable, suburban-type lifestyle?
Yeah, I knew that, you know, you had to go to New York. I mean, that seemed to be the place to go. I worked for 2 summers at LaSalle College Music Theater in Philadelphia and met a lot of people and really got a taste of the theater there. And went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts for 2 years in New York. That kind of like, instead of going to high school, I went there. Although, you know, I was the editor of my high school newspaper at Wissahickon Senior High School in Ambler, Pennsylvania. And I always loved writing. And my biggest dilemma, my parents helped me out a lot with this, because I wanted to either be going to journalism or photojournalism, because I also loved photography. And I've been a photographer. That's what's kept me alive all these years. Between acting parts, I'd take actors' headshots. And I think that the acting kind of took off. My parents said, look, go to the American Academy for a year, see if they ask you back for the second year, because that's the kind of school it was. They took anybody the first year, and then they'd ask a third of the class back. And they said, you know, because for acting, you don't need a college degree. But if it doesn't work out, if they don't ask you back, then it'll mean, I mean, they're the professionals, they know. Then it'll mean, well, you weren't meant to do it, and you can go to college and, you know, concentrate on photography or writing or whatever. So now it seems like filmmaking is kind of like, was everything I was ever interested in back then, you know? It's combining everything, the photography, the writing, the acting, and everything I've learned from all three.
I have to tell you, a couple of years ago, I noticed on the TV page that you were going to be appearing in a rerun of what I think was a made-for-TV movie called something like Centerfold. So I stayed up late to see what this movie was. And I think you played opposite Don Johnson in it. I forget what year this was made.
Yeah, Kim Basinger was the Centerfold, Katie. And I was her best friend, and I had a husband who Don Johnson played. And we had, there was some waif off the street who was played by an actress named Terry Nunn, who in fact is the lead singer for the group Berlin. I mean, this little TV movie had, everybody was like nowhere then.
That's right. I think it's very funny to look back on things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like to watch those when they come on?
You know, I haven't been watching much TV over the years, and so, but I always hear somebody says, oh, Hustling was on, or Centerfold was on. It's like, oh, God. Sometimes when I've seen them, it's like a time machine. It's scary.
Are you doing roles like that anymore, made-for-TV movies?
Well, like it's my choice. Terry, it's like whether I get hired or not.
Right, of course. Let me just stop you right here. Why is it, do you think, that you hadn't gotten lots of roles in the past few years until 30-something in your new movie?
I moved to New York 5 years ago. So, first of all, there's a lot less work in New York than there is in L.A. I did a few days' work on an after-school special that Lee Grant directed called Cindy Eller. I spent 3 weeks in Yugoslavia doing a mini-series, a two-nighter for NBC called Wallenberg, A Hero's Story, about Raoul Wallenberg during World War II, and with Richard Chamberlain. I played his secretary. I did another after-school special, one day's work in it, that Catlin directed, who directed Sticky Fingers. And I did a play at the Jewish Repertory Theater in New York called Crossing Delancey. The playwright wrote the role for me. I created it, and now, of course, Amy Irving has done it in a film. But so I did work, you know, but I went up for lots of stuff. I just, you know, that this is what I got. And actually, I kind of look back at it because it's like fate. You know, I go, well, if I had been doing a lot of acting work in the last 5 years, I certainly couldn't have, been in Sticky Fingers, because that needed the full attention and commitment that it got.
Well, I wish you the best with your new movie, and I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
My guest has been Melanie Mayron, and she co-produced, co-wrote, and stars in the new film, Sticky Fingers. It's a comedy. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.